Strategic Christian Services is pleased to present Creating Wealth, Training Families to Build Dynasties. This message is entitled Inheriting the Vision by Rachel and Catherine Peacock.
Well, I'm very excited to be here this morning and just to get a chance to share with you all some of the things that my parents have done and that the Lord has done in our greater spiritual family in order to transfer just the vision that of the kingdom. And I think it'll be increasingly evident as you hear each of us speak and see us that we all are very unique. And my parents have done a wonderful job of raising up three individuals, but at the same time, there is such a unity as we all are focused on the same vision in love and faith. We're really united. And I'm excited to share with you some of the ways that they've done that practically and hopefully just impart some of the spirit of that. And I know that there's not a formula. There's not, you know, that if you do these 10 things then we can guarantee you this is exactly what's going to happen. But I do know that there are principles that are consistent with the Lord and with His Word that He does honor. So I want to start by talking about the birthing of the vision. How do you generate the vision in your children that you have in yourself? And I think the key to that is to give your children a sense of identity. And interestingly enough, I think in the world, people usually think about identity. You have to look inside. You have to look at your heart and your desires and your thoughts. And then you will know who you are and you'll have a sense of identity. But I believe that the scripture teaches that our identity actually starts outside in accepting God's sovereignty, in His choices, the family that He's put us in, the nation, the race, the height, the abilities, that our identity comes from the outside, and that as we seek life, that begins in death, and that we need to first die to any of our agenda or our need to be recognized or successful or anything that we would raise up as a standard for ourselves, and that in dying to ourselves and living to Christ, that we do find ultimately our own fulfillment. But you can't reach that directly by looking at what will fulfill yourself. And so I think that the very foundation of the vision is that you would have a sense of identity, but that comes in God's sovereignty and in obedience to that and a heart that's committed to serving God in whatever way He has. And in that, you are grounded as a person. Some of the ways that my parents have brought us into their vision is really, like we've been talking about, building on the same wall together, and that you really get to know someone by working with them. My parents have given us a sense of ownership, but also creativity in a project. You know, we might be doing a project with the family. A lot of times for me, I love to cook. So I've always been a part of the hospitality when we have people into our homes. So my parents might say, you know, will you do dinner for the board of directors or get the guest room ready or things like that when I was younger. And they would give me a task, but they would give me creativity and a broadness about how I would do that and then to acknowledge it. When kids are young, if they're given responsibility, it's very exciting and they want to rise to the call. And when you, it seems simple, but to just acknowledge that in the situations when you've given your kids a task within the realm of what you're doing, that's something simple, but it's so important in bringing them into, just a habit of wanting to work with you and feeling like they really are a part of what you're doing. And that really brought a sense of responsibility and maturity to each of us at a young age. And definitely, as Adam talked about, my dad has always been like, yes, I am your peer. And I can remember different crossroads in my life where we came to points where we were discussing a major decision or maybe some things that were going on in my spirit. And I can remember him looking at me with all the intensity in him and saying, Rachel, I will not lose. And when he does that, you're pretty sure that he means it to say. And I'm very thankful for that. Puts the fear of God in me in a good way, you know. So there is definitely a sense of, really, that my parents have been my peers as far as my values and what I will consider important and what I will consider what's going to happen, the pressure in a good way. But it's amazing. I can't even remember when I wasn't close to my parents. I remember asking my dad a couple years ago, you know, Dad, who are your best friends? I know you have some wonderful relationships, and you are so close. Is it so-and-so? Is it so-and-so? And he just looked at me, and he said, you know, Rachel, I really love all those people that you've mentioned, but really, you guys are my best friends. And I know that he means that. That, you know, it's amazing that I am one of his best friends, and I'm 23. And when we talk about things, I can feel the weight that he puts on my perspective, or if I pray about something and bring it to him, that is a weighty matter. And I know that that's been built as we've been working together as a family. And I think one of the points that Catherine and I were talking about what we're going to share, and one of the things that she brought up was that when someone treats you like an adult, it's appropriate when they've given you responsibility like an adult that they treat you like an adult. And my parents, from the very beginning, when they gave us responsibility, and I had responsibility at a young age for lots of things, but they always had a proportionate increase in respect and in privilege that went with that responsibility. So that was excellent. Another thing that's very interesting, and it's one of those little keys that seems obvious once you hear it, but it's an easy one to miss, is that your children pick up your attitude about people and situations. And I think if my mom had chosen to be resentful that my dad was gone all the time, that all of us children would have taken on that attitude. But my mom really did an excellent job of, really, because she was part of the vision too, and it wasn't just dad's ministry, but it was all of us, and we all needed to work together, and we all had a sense that this was something that we owned as a family, and it was important and had to be birthed out of our family. And the way that they speak about people they work with or responsibilities they have or situations, all those things shaped how we perceived things. And my parents were very careful how they spoke about leaders. I was not privy to, you know, the dirt that was going on, because my parents wanted me to have a respect. They were very careful how they honored people that they worked with and covered their nakedness occasionally. And so that was very important. My parents would also be very, they would instill a sense of honor in us about people that would stay in our homes. They would be like, you know, it is such a privilege to have this person stay with us. I'm so excited about you touching their spirit. And they would really put faith in us and a sense of expectation about the situation that we were going to be a part of, or the people that we were going to meet. And I just want to encourage you, whatever you're doing, your vision for your business or your children or your church, that it's surprising how much your attitude shapes the attitude of the people that you influence very much. And if you feel like there isn't a proper respect or appreciation or understanding, it would be helpful to look at maybe the words that you've casually let come out of your mouth that were unfiltered, that are kind of influencing the way that the people that you want to receive the message with faith are able to hear it. And of course, as I mentioned before, the fact that with increased responsibility there's increased privilege, and I feel incredibly privileged with all of the extra work and expectations that have been put on us as Peacock children. There has been a tremendous privilege that we have been able to sit in on some phenomenal meetings, and when we've had guests in our homes, we've been able to, you know, eavesdrop on just discussions. And that was one of my very favorite things. I can remember, like, being 13 and 14, and my parents would kind of let me be there in the living room when they were up late talking with men and women of God, and just being able to bathe in that and take that in. And I really have a heart after just the deep things of the Lord and really wanting to learn and sit at these people's feet. And we were able to have those privileges that were in proportion to our involvement and, of course, our maturity and the appropriateness. But that was something that really helped us as a family, was that they included us as much as they could in the family vision and what they were doing. I guess the last thing I want to say under this point is how my parents dealt with it when we were getting tired and it was no longer something that was easy to do. And I remember one day I was completing a task and my dad came in and he's like, Rachel, are you okay? You know? And I said, Dad, I'm just burned out. We've been entertaining for like a month straight and I'm totally exhausted and I just really don't want to do this anymore. And he says, you know, Rachel, I understand. And he said, I want to encourage you to look at 2 Samuel 24:24. So actually I'll read it right now. This was David's response about an offering, and he said to the king, he said, "No, but I will surely buy it from you for a price." This is about the sacrifice he wanted to offer. He said, "For I will not offer a burnt offering to the Lord which costs me nothing." And I learned a wonderful lesson that day, which was when it costs, that's when you really are giving an offering. It's costing you. And I really learned that sometimes there is a cost. Sometimes it's not easy to just psych yourself up for it and be like, yes, I want to do this. And you really have a difficult time and you really want to be doing something else, so you're tired of doing that. But my parents taught me that there is something very valuable when you hit your edge and you're burned out. Then you really get to give God a precious offering. And that really goes along with that theme of when you die is when you live. That's the very beginning of your life in Christ, is when you're able to give Him when it really costs. So after we've birthed the vision and we have instilled a sense of identity out of sovereignty and working together with the family vision and having a sense of sacrifice and responsibility and all those things, I believe that the next thing that God lets us do is to see our uniqueness as it fits into the coherence of the vision with that. And as we find our life in losing it, we get to see that God actually does put different gifts in all of us for a unique accomplishment of the purposes that He has. And I think this is where we get to learn to be open, because it's easy for us to have an idea about how God needs to do things. And, well, okay, if this is the vision, then A, B, and C must be the only three options to fulfill the vision. So you're going to do this, and you're going to do this, and you're going to be this way. And God is so much bigger than that. And it's been so wonderful for me to see each of the talents and the unique personalities and all those things that God's put in our family, and how although each of those things are different. And I can remember often, actually, all three of us were in different schools, which is a lot of work for my parents. I mean, one of us was homeschooling. Adam was in Catholic all-boys school, and KJ was, I think she was in public school. And so we were all doing different things. And my parents really had a sense of uniqueness and for what God was saying to each of us at a specific time. And it's easier to want to do like a cookie cutter and like, okay, you're all going to play soccer and you're all going to do this. But my parents really sought the Lord with us and for us to develop what the unique gift in us were. And that really takes faith to see how God is going to let things unfold outside of our plan or our paradigm, and to seek His peace and not our comfort is very important. And, you know, just to give you a personal example of this in my life, I was thinking about all of our different talents and things like that, and I got an interest in nutrition about 8 years ago, and I've been pursuing that in some training and apprenticeships and things like that. And people might think, okay, how does nutrition fit into the scheme of SCS and the vision of the family? And the Lord really gave me a vision for several things. First of all, it's a really great safety net for, I guess, the system. And you hear prophecies about, you know, everything getting really bad and things like that. And God knows exactly how He wants to deal with our nation. But I do know that it's an excellent, for me, I've seen it as a safety net, that I would actually know how to care for my family without, if we didn't have prescription drugs and if we didn't have certain types of things, I would be able to say, this is the, you know, the 10 foods we could live on, and this is how we grow them, and this is how you deal with the fever when you can't get a hold of such and such. And really as a safety net and a preparation for our family, that we can have a security in difficult times. Also, I really have such a burden for all the men of God that the Lord has raised up with tremendous wisdom. And I know that the enemy would love to see them put by the sidelines because their health, they can't go out and minister. It's like right as they are so ripe and they're so full of God and they have been processed, and maybe in their 40s and 50s and they get something that they can't travel and they can't speak and their focus is totally taken away because their body is not letting their spirit spend itself like it wants to. And I really can, I see myself as a resource for people that my dad works with that want it. You know, if they come to me and they say, I really am interested in how I can get back on track because I know there's so much more for me to do and I want to be able to do it. So really I see, you know, the nutrition here, you might think, how does that fit in? You know, shouldn't you be a secretary or something? But it does. Another thing that God has been doing is through an unlikely path. He has been training me to be, I guess, in PR or an ambassador for the kingdom. And that started when I was in high school. I modeled for several years, and I learned about doing hundreds of interviews and how to present yourself and how to communicate with integrity and to not be self-conscious. And then I was involved in the interns program. I went through actually with Adam. We were both in the first year, which was great to have that experience together. And then through that, I got involved in our service project, which was going into high schools and junior highs and speaking on abstinence. And so I've been able to speak to about 6,000 kids in the last 7 years. And it's like I can see how the Lord has trained me through different experiences. And now I'm currently working in interior design with an artist, and we're going into estates and talking to people that are like in Fortune 500 and, you know, redoing their homes and things like that. And there is an authority and just a comfort that the Lord has put in me, because I know who I am, and I'm not impressed by that. I'm not fazed by that. I'm comfortable, and I'm able to speak the word of the Lord without, I guess, self-consciousness. So here the Lord has kind of taken me through a really interesting path. But I know that none of them were ends in themselves. They're just, it's just a phase. It's just training for a future. And if my parents had been, real concerned, well, I don't know if, you know, I see Rachel doing this for the next 30 years. But they were able to see what God was doing at each time and to really have faith and to watch the fruit of it. And to, you know, we were before the Lord fervently during my times. And sometimes when you're exposed to certain things which can be scary or seem big, you are especially on your face to make sure that your eyesight is clear. But I can really see how the Lord has used some of these things in my life to prepare me for his ultimate goal, his bigger goal of allowing me to spread his word and to be placed in certain positions that I would be able to communicate with people about the things of the kingdom with great authority and great comfort and peace. So I just want to encourage each of you that the beginning is a sense of sovereignty, but just to be willing to have open hands and to hear God do something that surprises you, and to be willing to just be flexible and pursue him and be obedient, but just to recognize that sometimes we think the straightest, the easiest path is direct, when really the best way is a little bit surprising and kind of takes an unusual route. So I guess what I'd like to talk about next is the three phases of enthusiastic generational transfer. And I've touched on the first one, which is identity and vision, and that coming out of sovereignty, your nation, your heritage, your gifts, the things that you're not good at. I'm thankful for the things I'm not good at, because there's so many things that I'm interested in that it's really clear for me. I already have like 10 lives I want to live, so I'm thankful for the talents I don't have, because that's one path I don't have to worry about pursuing and seeing if that's the one that God has for me. So out of sovereignty, our strengths and weaknesses as blessings to direct us to the things that God does have for us. Also, identity and vision are birthed out of service. It's out of laying our life down that we find it, that we learn responsibility, we develop skills. Maybe there's skills that we wouldn't have thought we needed, or maybe skills we didn't even want to acquire. But God had those for us. He wanted us to be prepared for the future, for things that were ahead of us. And thirdly, identity is birthed out of unity, and that there is a strength and a security in being part of something bigger than yourself. I believe the second phase in an enthusiastic generational transfer is the uniqueness, that we're each a part and we're different, but we're crucial to a whole. And each, if you look at a watch or something, all the gears and the little levers and things like that are all totally different. They don't look like each other, but they all work together perfectly for the same purpose. And that each of us could see our uniqueness, but as it fits into the whole. You know, I think about there's a verse in Solomon 6:8, and it's like, there's 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number, but my dove, my perfect one, is unique. And I believe that God sees all of us like that. It's like, you know, there are queens and there are all these wonderful things, but you are unique. And I think God wants to say that to each of us, that he has put something in us that is unique and it's perfect and it's tailored for his specific cause, and it's only in us, and it's for that purpose, and that he delights in that uniqueness, and he has a plan for it, and that we can have faith that he does have that for us, and if we seek it, we'll find it, and if we are obedient, he'll develop it in us. And I guess lastly, in uniqueness, that It's in sacrifice that we develop our giftings. And I want to encourage you that excellence in your children will teach them to succeed in any area of life. I know my parents have taught us that we want to do everything as unto the Lord. And even at a small age, I can think of times when my parents said, well, is that really your best? You know, would you feel that if you show that to Jesus, he'd say, yeah, that's the best you did. And my parents really encouraged us to have excellence, and that in our uniqueness, that we would be very conscientious about the gifts that God put in us, that we would steward those well and have discipline and vision and excellence. And then in purpose, the third point, in purpose, that is born out of death, that it's nurtured in faith, and that our purpose is established in obedience. As we obey, we truly learn what it is to have meaning in our life. I think one very important point that I also want to bring up is that raising children or establishing a business or a church is a series of small decisions. If you talk to somebody that has compromised in some way or they've made some decision that's really hurt their life, it's rarely that they just came to a point and just snapped and they decided to, you know, run off with all the money. It's usually a series of small decisions. They shoplifted a piece of, you know, some gum, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then eventually they're doing fraud. And I want to encourage you that just as that's true for the negative, just as, you know, we compromise a little bit more and we need to check ourselves before it gets out of hand, it's true in the positive too, that success and becoming who we want to be, it's a series of small decisions, and they just build. And by God's grace, we can get an inertia where we continue to make better and bigger small decisions. And I think it's kind of like that law of sowing and reaping my dad was talking about. And, you know, we usually think about it as a negative thing. Well, you know, hey, it's sowing and reaping. You know, what do you expect? But on the positive side, it's equally true that if you plant a great crop, it's going to come up and you're going to be so pleased and you're going to be thrilled to harvest it. And in the same way with our lives, it's a series of small decisions with our children. The way that you speak to your children, the way that you encourage and speak faith and vision and life to your employees, the way that you relate to your churches. It's really a series of small decisions, and I want to encourage you just to pursue God about the things that maybe he's speaking to you about that you wouldn't have considered that significant. It's like we think sometimes there's like this one key and we could come to a conference or read a book and we just learn that thing we need to do that would just make it all perfect and wonderful. But really, the way that God works is it's incremental. And so one of the things that my parents really taught us was that you catch things quick. Like my mom would discipline us for bad attitudes. And so it would never get to an action, you know. And I think that's so true. It's like, and you either, if you're going to have to discipline the child, you might as well discipline them, you know, before it becomes a big problem. You know, if we were having a bad attitude and our face was sour and we were being belligerent, that was as worthy of a spanking as open defiance and, you know, doing something else. So I want to encourage you, too, if you can nip things in the bud and get them little, then you're going to have a chance to invest the energy that you would have spent dealing with the consequences had you let it continue to actually doing something constructive and building in them, which I think is so key. I think the last thing I want to share is just the importance of coaching. And I think there isn't anyone in here that doesn't want a coach and doesn't want someone that is so committed to you becoming all that you can be. And if you are able to be that for your children, I can't think of a bigger gift that you can give them. Someone that loves you and is absolutely committed to discovering your game and tailoring a workout that is perfectly suited to develop you to win it. And I want to encourage you as whatever you're leading, that you would pursue God about who can coach you and who you can coach. And my parents have given all of us a tremendous gift in being our coaches and our friends. And as much as we kid around about, you know, my dad looking at us and saying, I will win and I'm your peer and all that stuff, I don't know anyone who has a better relationship with their parents. And I don't feel in any way stifled or, you know, controlled by their involvement in my life. It has been phenomenal. And they have given me so much leeway in making decisions and in growing, and I think they've done an excellent job in that the transfer of, you know, a young person to an adult, and we're in that process now. But they're learners, and they don't do everything perfect, but neither do I. So it's just been such a blessing to learn with them and to see their commitment to learning together and growing. And I'm really excited about what Catherine's about to share, because she has some phenomenal stuff. So I guess I'll close with that and just want to encourage you that no matter where you are, there's always hope. It's never too late and it's never too early. And just want to encourage you to seek God and to believe that He does have at least as much stake in everything flourishing as you would hope, as you do. He's totally in your corner. So with that, I will give you my sister Catherine.
First of all, I'd like to say I'm nothing like my father. Just kidding. Actually, I'm a little bit of him, a little bit of my mom, and a little bit of Spice thrown in on the side. So I'm going to be touching on a lot of the points that my sister did because she copied my notes. But sorry. Just kidding. Sorry, I'm a little silly this morning. Rachel and I actually did go over a lot of the things we're going to share. And since we're both speaking on the same subject, obviously I'm going to be reinforcing a lot of the ideas that she was speaking about prior to me. But since we know it takes a couple times for things to really sink in, I think it'll do us good to hear things a couple times. So, and in one thing I'd like to say before I speak too as well, that when I'm speaking about my parents, for those of you in business, I would encourage you to know that when I speak about parents, you could interchange that with the words boss or pastor. And when I speak about children, you could interchange that with the words employees or congregations. Because what we're talking about are principles here that are not just, this is in my family, but these are principles that will extend beyond just parent-child relationships. My first point being instilling sense of identity and vision. This began when I was young. I'd say I was brainwashed into thinking that Jesus actually loved me and that he had a plan for my life. And people do call that brainwashing. You'd be amazed when I talk to a lot of my unsaved friends. But I'm happily brainwashed because I know that it's true. And I was told from a very young age that God had a plan for my life. There was a reason for me being in my family. And we were talking about them referring earlier to my father traveling so much. I was told then as well when I was younger, because his travel increased a lot when I was born. I don't know if there's any connection there, but I don't know. But I was told, though, when I was younger that not only God had a plan for my life, but he had a plan for my father's life as well, which was why he had to travel so much. So it made it easier for me to deal with it because I knew this was God's plan for him. So who am I to have a problem with that? And as much as we're speaking about a lot of things that my father has done, my mother obviously had to carry a large brunt of it because my father traveled so much. So quite often in these principles, my father would say it very firmly and strongly, and then while he was away, my mother would be constantly reinforcing it, which is what we saw all the time when I was raised. One thing my father often talks about, and we have discussed here as well, the myth about children needing to go out and find their own identity. And I was thinking about this the other day. I got this revelation when I was doing homework, I think. I'm just going to read you the quote that I thought of in my mind. I didn't have to do that and go find out my destiny because I have the support of my family and my church community who can tell me what my strengths and gifts are. Why go out and try to find, you know, where are my gifts? Where's my destiny? When the people who know me the best and who are around me can see it and can tell me. When I saw that, I was just like, wow, because it's so futile to go out there and try and discover what I'm supposed to do and what my gifts are and what my calling is when I have already got it right there. I've got people around me who have observed me since I was a little kid who know, my parents know exactly what my strengths and weaknesses are. My church community knows that. And so why try and go out and find that when I'm at my college campus or when I'm with my friends or whatever? That's stupid, I think. And I realize that, and I realize that is what so much of the blessing is when we're talking about generational transfer and finding your gifts, is the fact that you have it right there. You don't have to search for it. You save time, and not only do you not have to search for it, but you've got these people all around you to reinforce it and to bring it out of you and to call it out of you. And I think that's a major point that we need to realize. And we're talking about us as kids being individuals as well. My parents always didn't want me to feel just that I was a peacock, you know, because you can be known for being a peacock. But I wasn't just a peacock, I was Catherine. And as much as, I think it's even significant in the name, as much as Peacock is my last name and is who I represent and is a huge part of me, I've got my first name, Catherine, which is my whole uniqueness as well. And you have the two together, which make me who I am. And that really helped me get more of an idea of my identity and my vision as well. My father always likes to quote, "It's easier to build children than to repair men," which is major statement, and I have definitely seen that from my experience going out into the world and interacting with people. So all those things together, I think, really helped instill vision and identity, because it's important when you have the vision to have your identity, obviously. You can't just have the vision just like, well, where do I fit into this? You've got to have your identity to know, okay, this is, I share in this vision, so thus this is my identity in it, and you have those two together, and you can start working on it. So... And when you go to starting to work on it, brings me to my second point, which is using personal gifts to spread the corporate vision. All of us in our family have similar giftings and different giftings. We've got our own uniqueness as well as some of the common bonds. When I was saying earlier, I have some of my father and my mother and me and some other things. And I see that, and I'm thankful for that. You think about God's sovereignty. It is His sovereignty that obviously that I was put into this family, because I've receive things from my parents that are going to make me who I am, and yet I've got my individual things that help me not be just, you know, my father's daughter, my mother's daughter, but my individual sense of identity as well. One of the largest things that came about for me as far as personal destiny, I'm fulfilling the vision that my father and mother have set forth, but in somewhat in my own way. I too am involved with abstinence education. I started when I was 15 in my high school. My sister and brother had done it a year or two before me, and I just had, this has been a major part of my life because it's largely flavored my friends and a lot of my experiences. When I came into the school, I didn't know anyone. It was a public school. I'd been in private school and homeschooled prior to that. That was another thing we'd referenced before about schooling. I am so thankful for the years I had of homeschooling as well as I am for the years that I had of private school and public school. If I didn't have all three of those together, I wouldn't be who I am today. And if I hadn't have had the private and the homeschooling prior to going to public school, I definitely would not have made it, because I needed that preparation to survive the public school arena. But my parents well prepared me for that. So I went in there to the school not knowing anybody, and then I immediately began doing the abstinence education. So here's this new girl nobody knows, and all they know about her is she's come into my class numerous times telling us, you know, why she's not going to have sex until she gets married. So that was a very interesting foundation. Proceeding from that, I received a wide variety of nicknames, some appropriate for me to repeat, some not. But I was known very well for Miss Abstinence, Miss No Sex, and some other things that I will not put on tape. So that started out when I was 15 in my sophomore year in high school. And as a result of that, and there's a point for me telling you all this. This isn't just giving you my resume, but there's a point. As a result of that, my sister and I both actually were asked to go to New York City to do the Rolanda talk show, which some of you may remember that it was on a couple of years ago. And I got to speak on that very briefly. But as a result of that, just alone, that was a good experience, being able to be on camera and deal with that arena. And I was speaking back and forth with a young man who was advocating all his promiscuities. So I got to do that. Then they did a large newspaper article with a big picture. So then I started getting stopped in supermarket lines, being asked if I was that no sex girl. And and of course, they of course would say this very loudly around everyone in line. And that, this is no joke. I had people literally say, "Hey, didn't you come to my class and talk about sex?" And they'd yell really loud. And everyone would look at me and I'd be like, "Yes, that was me." And there's people still to this day when I run into from high school that was still in a very loud voice asking me if I was still a virgin. So people are very blunt about the subject, but you know what? If that's the position God's put me in, I am able to deal with it. And it's been a very good witness. It's been amazing. Again, I mean, I've had people years later come back and say, "Hey, I remember when you came into my class." And I didn't have the guts to say it then, but man, I respect you so much. And I think that's awesome that you made that decision and you positively influenced my life. And I've had that happen numerous times, just from one little presentation in their classroom. So it's just amazing. It snowballed from there. I've now, I just did the Maury Povich show in June, and I've done a couple radio shows, and then I'm now speaking at my own college about abstinence. So It's amazing, and I think it's going to actually take off even more from here. I've gotten a couple other opportunities thrown my way. But looking at that, that is an awesome testimony, obviously, that God has given me the grace and the position to be able to speak about that and to have such an awesome impact. And that's, you wouldn't think necessarily when I was young that my parents would say, you know, our vision for the family is that all of us are going to go out there and talk about abstinence. I mean, obviously, that's not what they would do. But they want grandchildren, honestly, but that's a different story. Abstinence upon marriage, not celibacy. We'll clarify the two. But they wouldn't necessarily put that for all of us. That's what they want us to do. But they did give me the vision that they want all of us to be examples for Christ, to spread the gospel, it's clear that we would have, you know, some different leadership things that we would need to do. That there's a lot of things that they told me that this is what you're probably going to be doing and this is what our vision is for the family. And then they laid that out there, and then it was up to God and up to me being faithful to what God has said to, okay, how am I going to act that out? And so here God brings up the abstinence thing, and so I'm able to do that as I'm fulfilling their vision, but in the specific area that God has designed for me. So that has been just such a blessing to be able to see that is the working out of them carrying the vision. It's not just my father was a carpenter, I'm going to be a carpenter. It's my father had this vision and I'm going to act out the vision, but it may not be, you know, I may be a contractor instead of just working, you know, with the wood. I mean, it just depends on how God's going to have you work it out. So I think that's a real big point as far as using your personal gifts to spread the corporate vision. In doing that, my parents' vision is carried out through me into my generation as I want the vision that I'm now getting to be carried on to my children. And in speaking about that brings me to my third point, which is preparing for the future. In my speaking on abstinence, that has prepared me for speaking in public like now. I don't think I'd be able to speak very well right now if I hadn't have done it probably hundreds of times before this in various settings. God has, and a major point of that too is the fact that God started with me when I was 15. And so many of us, I remember thinking, just, I can't wait till I'm older and I start my ministry. I can't wait till I'm an adult and I can do this and I can do that. And I realized I don't have to wait. At 15, I could start. And it started, obviously, before then. It started when I was 5, when my parents started, you know, from the moment I was born, they started brainwashing me. And it started then. And it's not that we have to wait until, oh, I can't wait till retirement when I have more time for my ministry, or I can't wait till I have kids and I can instill this in them. I mean, we can start it right now, whatever position we're in. There's no qualification that you have to be at this point or at this point. It's God wants it now. Why wait? You know? And so I thought about that, and it just was amazing that God was able to start. I was able to start my ministry in high school and prepare for whatever the rest of my ministry is going to be for the rest of my life then. So it's just amazing to think about that you can start it right then, and that what you're doing right now is going to prepare you for the future. Because as we know, life is a continual thing, and we're never going to just reach, okay, we're done with learning about this. I mean, it's continual. There's always more that we can learn. There's always more that we can polish up and make better. And through a lot of the speaking that I've done as well, and things that my parents have put in me as well, is a heart for evangelism and the relationships that I've formed through doing all those things and through being in the public school, interaction with unsaved, speaking about abstinence, have brought that opportunities for evangelism. And again, if my parents had totally sheltered me, I mean, I was homeschooled for a couple years, which is very good, but I also got some other attributes as well. And my parents definitely wanted me to focus, obviously, the scripture, whatsoever things are good, pure, just, focus on these things and all that. But also, you don't want to be totally unaware of what is going on in the world. And that's not to say they're like, okay, hon, you know, we're going to rent you Murder on 19th Street or whatever so you can watch it and know what's happening with that. I mean, it wasn't something like that. It was just, yes, this stuff goes on, but this is how you deal with it, and this is what the Lord wants you to see. So I was able to have the godly perspective of life, but not be in the dark about what was really going on. So when I went into public school, I wasn't a total nerd that didn't know that people, you know, smoked cigarettes and had sex before they got married. I mean, I was aware, but I was also, okay, well, I was also aware that it was wrong. Okay, this is how you confront that. This is a standard that you have. But in order to be prepared for my future, I have to be grounded in my family. And I spoke about that earlier as far as them giving me my vision and showing me my gifts and whatever. And this isn't, and I say my parents in particular, but this is whoever God has placed as your family. This could be, you know, if I wasn't raised by my parents, this would be my grandmother that raised me. This would be the mentor that God has brought into my life. This would be whoever it is that God has placed above me to train me, to coach me, as Rachel was referring to coaching earlier. I have to have that because, as Adam was saying, no person is self-made. And I don't believe you ever are going to detach from having someone that is over you. I would never want to be where, okay, it's just me and God now. My parents did a good job, and now it's me. Or now it's, you know, I would never want to be in that position because there is a reason for the hierarchy of things. And God places those people in your life for a reason. And I know that I have to be grounded in my parents. And when they're not there, it's going to be something else. I've got to be grounded, though, in something higher than me in addition to just my relationship with the Lord. And it would be stupid for me to waste the wealth of resources that I have available in them. They have, I know my dad was talking about all the experiences that we don't have to go through the experiences because they did. That is the biggest thing I come into confrontation with all my friends and my peer groups. Because they say, everyone, time and time again, well, you don't know because you haven't done it. How do you know because you haven't done it? And we talk about that in the absence education as well. And what I say is, look, I don't need to stick my hand in a fire to know that I'm going to get burned. I mean, hello, you can look and you can see. And I've seen that through my parents. I remember talking with my dad. I had a conversation with my dad about drugs. And I remember talking to him about some of his experiences with that because my friends were really getting into it. And I didn't even have to touch curiosity about it. I didn't even have to touch the curiosity because he dealt with it. He told me what he went through. And I could live vicariously through him and be like, okay, I don't want that, you know. And that has saved me so much, and I just think about it's God's grace and God's blessing. I mean, my name, Catherine, means pure, and by God's grace, I've been able to be that in many areas, and that is largely because my parents went before me and dealt with stuff so I don't have to deal with it. And I would just encourage all of you who have such a wealth of experiences to pour that out on people because then they don't have to deal with it. You know, if there's something they can live through you, they can see through you. And it's unwise on our part not to draw from that. And that's what I try to explain to my friends. I'll say, look at so-and-so, look at this and look at this, because you don't have to experience it to know. And you're going to have a higher cost if you do experience it. Because I guarantee you, you're going to come to the same conclusion that I did, but you'll just have a lot more hurt and you'll have the bad consequences of dealing with it. So that's really important. And even a lot we talk about, you know, respecting our parents and looking up to those above us. We have to know and not assume that all parents and all authority above us are going to be perfect and great. And I remember one of my best friends in high school has an alcoholic mother. And I remember speaking with her about that because I just kept saying to her, you know what, God placed you in that family for a reason. And even though what your mother is doing is not right, you still have to respect her because of who she is, regardless of what she's doing. And that was such a hard thing to get across to her, but it's amazing. I just told her, I said, I'm not saying advocate what she's doing, and I'm not saying when she does things that are wrong that you can't fight back necessarily, but I'm saying you got to realize that she's your mother for a reason, and she deserves respect just for anything, at least for carrying you for 9 months. You've got to give her some respect for that. And I just encouraged her, even when her mother was having real severe problems with alcohol, to give her more respect, and just if you can't respond to her in a proper way, then just keep your mouth shut. Because she knows what she's doing is wrong anyways. And I just gave her that encouragement. And I remember her coming back a few weeks later. And she said, you know what, Catherine? I just did the little things. I held my tongue. I tried to let her know that I do respect and honor her. And their relationship in a couple weeks had improved greatly just from those little things that she did. So I know that for all of us that do have authority over us or do have those coaches, those parents, whoever, who are less than perfect, that it doesn't mean that we, just because of all their fallenness, that we can't glean from them and that we can't still realize that God placed them there for a reason. And realizing in who I am now that I am preparing for the future, I'm realizing that the experience is just as what my parents did when they were my age is now being passed on to me. What I am doing now is going to be passed on to my kids. And when I was thinking about that, that's an awesome responsibility as well, to realize, you know, I can't relive yesterday. So what I'm doing, I'm going to be passing on to my children, and I'm going to be able to tell them from my experiences, from what I did, that I'm going to be able to be a legacy for them and give vision to them as well. And that is a pretty heavy thing as well. And it's awesome for me to think of my kids being able to look at their grandparents and their parents and being third generation, being able to have but be consistent throughout. I think it's an awesome, awesome responsibility and an awesome thing to see of just God's goodness and grace in our lives. So that's the main gist of what I feel. I just would encourage all of us to realize, like we were saying before, that there is hope, that this is not just, there are a lot of practical steps as far as what we're talking about during this whole conference, but more than anything, you know, it is God's heart, and it's the spirit of what he's talking about and what he's doing. It's the principles, and that we all can attain it, even later in life, even later into a business, later into a church, because, I mean, look at God's amazing transforming power. You look at Paul when he was Saul for, what, 30? He was probably, what, 30 when he got converted, I believe? I'm going through Acts right now. I mean, he was not a young lad, and yet God totally changed his perspective and converted him to the complete other side of the spectrum, and he was one of the greatest men that ever lived, and God grabbed him later on in life. So I don't think it's ever too late for any of us to instill these things and bring them into our lives. So thank you very much.
This is a copyrighted program of Strategic Christian Services, Santa Rosa, California. Unauthorized reproduction is prohibited. Strategic Christian Services offers a wide variety of other educational materials and training schools designed to help you live life to its fullest. For more information on our products and services, please call us at 1-800-700-0605 or join us online at www.gostrategic.org.